It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
You got some interesting people on the walls.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the series. Of course, please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at Spotify and Apple Podcasts, at NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Recent episodes, in fact, have included my interviews with Lucinda Williams, Nick Hexum of 311, Pearl Jam, two from Pearl Jam, one with Jeff Ament and one with Stone Gossard. We had Louise Post of Ruka Salt. We had Jason Scott Lee, the actor, the cast of the show Outlander, Esty Haim from Haim, Kara Jackson, the band Daughter. We talked Extraction 2 with Golshifteh Farahani and director Sam Hargrave. Also had Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age, Dave Davies of The Kinks, the band Inhaler, and country star Carly Pierce. Those are just recent episodes that you can find on the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, the legendary Ian Hunter. Going to be talking with the Mata Hoople singer about his new record called Defiance Part 1. It's the first in a two-part guest-heavy series. Ian's going to tell us about starting the album during COVID and remotely involving artists such as Slash and Billy Gibbons, since his own band wasn't able to be in the studio together, of course. And we'll discuss how age and ageism play into being a rock musician. He'll talk about getting better at his craft as he gets older and looking back to his school days and his relationship with his father for inspiration in the songs. Ian's also going to go on to talk about working with Jeff Beck and Taylor Hawkins, both, of course, who have since passed away, having Jeff Tweedy on guitar on the record, and which guests we can expect on Defiance Part 2. So let's get into it and talk Defiance Part 1. It's Kyle Meredith with Ian Hunter.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And seriously, let me throw some compliments at you at first, because I've been a fan for a very long time. And each record, you know, as good as the last one, I am absolutely loving this part one of Defiance and everything that's a part of it. What a great rock and roll record.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for more than this.
Well, that's, you know, the easy question here at the beginning, and I'm sure is always the question, it's part one, and it's guest heavy, and it's not a concept record, but there seems to be a concept in play, and maybe that's where we can start. Where does this album start? What was the idea behind it?
COVID, yeah, the usual. Yeah, I mean, I came to Rome in June 19, and I woke up with tinnitus and COVID around that, you know, around that fall. And so nothing much was going on. So to my mind, you either get depressed and mope, or you do, you know, you write songs. That's what I do for a living. So I went downstairs and I got lucky, you know, because I'm not one of those that can write like a mathematician. It sort of comes. And I just had a jag there of about 21 songs. I guess it must have been maybe a year, something like that. So that turned into Defiance Part 1 and Defiance Part 2. And my band couldn't do it because of COVID. But then my manager and Ross Halfin, who's a photographer, said to me, well, you know, there's other people that got studios. And it sort of went from there, you know. Ross said that Slash was interested, and then it was Billy Gibbons, and then it was, and he just kept going. So I kept writing.
I mean, you've got those kind of people saying, I'll play with you. Why wouldn't you? That's well, incredible.
Well, yeah, you know, in itself, it's inspiration in itself, you know, so you just carry on.
So that, but the songs still stand on their own. I mean, this is fun. It's fun hearing all these people. It's fun seeing the guests, the track list and the guests on it. But how do you not let the guest list overpower the song, if that makes sense?
I don't know. I mean, I'm the root of it. It came out of my basement, which we are actually in now. Andy York, my co-producer, you know, and a piano and a drum machine and demos that turn into the real thing, you know, because you have stems now that you can send to people. And I didn't think too much in the early, I mean, like you, you know, I mean, is this going to work, you know? Because it's back to front. I did that with Once Bitten, Twice Shy. That was back to front. The drums went on last, that kind of. So I know it can work. Unfortunately, with the quality of the people that got involved in this, I mean, it worked. I was lucky.
Well, you used that situation of the best. Not everybody used COVID like I thought I would. Like, yeah. You know, we're going to have some real time off here. This is my time to really dig into something and be better. I mean, I did a lot of these, but otherwise I watched a lot of TV too. So I didn't come up with.
Same here, you know.
And we'll be right back right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Ian Hunter. So with the songs, and we'll get to some of the guests a little bit later because I really want to dig into some of these tracks here. Obviously, it does feel like there's a mission statement on here. Maybe if it arrived, as you said, in a lucky bit of inspiration or what, but the track, This Is What I'm Here For.
That's last track on the record, and it's deliberate because it's kind of old-fashioned, you know. It's a rocker. And This Is What I'm Here For, you know. I thought that's a nice title, you know. And that's definitely last track, you know. Good, it's okay.
But yeah, it's great. I think it's great. But do you see that, you know, because of what you're talking about in the song, like, does it come to stand for more than just the song, I guess the project?
Well, there's always that kind of ageism factor involved, you know, as you get older, you know, it's kind of disturbing. So I think that's probably an answer in its own way. To that, because it's silly, you know. I mean, if you've either got, you're either doing it good or you're doing it bad, you know, and it doesn't matter what age you are, you know. And I've done it bad at different ages, so yeah, I mean, I don't see that it comes into play, so I guess that's my answer, you know, that particular song. Yeah,
it's always interesting too, really, right? It's because I think not just because of arts, and obviously I'm saying this from perception. You know, I'm in my 40s, so I've you know, it's only what it looks like to me from the outside there, but because you're a public figure, like, if there are some jobs, no matter how old you are, nobody's going to knock on your door every week and be like, so are you going to be hanging it up soon? You know, it's like, there's something about this that, and this is the, like, as we always say, you're not digging ditches, you know, no. like, why is that question always, like, what do we expect, that you hit a certain age and we're like, well, you can't write a song anymore?
Well, I always go back to the kind of, like, when you were 16, you're a lousy plumber. When you're 65, you're pretty good.
You would hope to be pretty good anyway.
Yeah, you aspire. You know, I mean, people do get better at things. But songs are different because songs either come or they don't come. I read somewhere recently, somebody said it's like spirits are on the other side of the wall and they just sling them over. And your antenna has to be up in order to catch one. And there's some kind of relevance in that because sometimes you get a song that's country or really, really pop, and it's not yours. It belongs to the guy next door that, you know, the aim was amiss. And so, yeah, songwriting, it doesn't really apply to age. You know, either it comes or it doesn't, you know.
Well, then, as you've gotten more tools in your tool belt,
yeah.
I mean, part of that's right. You know, you can have anything, bit of inspiration, but if you don't have the language, if you don't have the tools, then you might not know what to do with it. You know, can you pinpoint what makes you a better songwriter now than 20, 30, 40 years ago?
Oh, it's better equipment for a start. You know, you start with a bow and arrow and then a 30 bob piano, you know, with half the keys missing, you know, when you're young. I was in factories coming home at night, annoying the wife intensely because, you know, you work all day and then you're playing, you know, in the evenings. And then, you know, nowadays, you know, there's a drum kit over there, there's a keyboards over there, you know, there's guitars over there. It's easier from that aspect. What's not so easy is, you know, you've mined a lot of lyrics, and that can get pretty hard, you know, because you're hard on yourself with lyrics. Plus, you've written a lot of them, you know, 300 or 400.
You got to try not to get in your own way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll come up with, I've got something now that's really, really good. The only trouble is half of it's on a record I did, you know, a couple of years back. And I really want to do this, but I know what I'll get if I do it. Yeah. I'm going to get scorched if I do that.
See, I don't know. Yeah. I was just thinking, like, a friend and I were talking about the band U2 recently.
Yes.
And U2, sort of a similar thing. They've had so many different sounds. And at some point, as fans who've been on the adventure with them, like, you go where you want to go, we're going to be there. And I say that about a lot of bands, not just them. I do like U2 quite a bit. But if they were to come out and say, you know what, we want to write a song and it just so happens to sound like With or Without You or whatever, Pride in the Name of Love, I'd be like, great, let's revisit that. You know, I think as a fan, again, I think this is the thing, like, what an artist might put on themselves, the weight that we're talking about, I think, with you, versus what the fans, because there's that whole thing, like, oh, sometimes I kind of wish they would sound like they used to.
I know, you just got to do what comes naturally. You can't really, in my case anyway, I don't think about fans. I just, if I like the song, you know, I go with it. And some people like it, and some people don't. Most people have never heard it.
But if you're lucky enough, you still get to keep hanging around and you still get to play the game. So there's always another song after that.
I make a living.
Yeah, you do. You seem like you do. And maybe that's, I'll play into the title, In Defiance. Here's the obvious question. In defiance of what? And maybe we've already covered the ground a little bit, but I'd like to hear that specifically.
I think it was basically school. You know, I went to a school. In England, you pass your 11 plus. It means you're intelligent. If you fail, it means, you know, you're a dickhead. So I passed quite by chance. And I went to this school and all the teachers were lousy. And I knew they were all lousy because there was one guy there that was really good. And I only got him for one term. And he was great. But the rest of the teachers were lousy. I never learned anything at school. So basically, that's what it's about. And that's what the video's about.
Looking back, I mean, what a great fuck off. that gets to play.
I mean, it's reverse psychology, that old bit. What were the parents and the school in those days? You know, you're talking 40s, you know, early 50s. you know, it was just not heard of. I mean, it was not right. It was, you know, and I lived in a Midland town, which is kind of like Mississippi. It's out of the way. It's nowhere near ports where you hear it in, you know, in, you know, stuff coming in from Memphis and stuff, you know, living in the middle of nowhere. So it's kind of difficult because nobody knows what you're on about. And when you do it, they don't particularly like it.
But still the music found you somehow. I mean, you know, from our side, we hear the rock and roll stories. And a lot of times when we hear about artists who came from England, it is the ports. You know, it's always that story. How did it make it to you? Because there was it somebody? Was it a record shop? What was it?
It was Radio Luxembourg. What happened was, yeah, late 50s, I think, early 60s, Radio Luxembourg. It started coming into England and it would fade and it would come loud and it would fade. And it was most annoying because, you know, it usually faded during the good bits. And there was a song called A Whole Lot of Shaking, Jerry Lee Lewis. And that was it. I mean, England was not an exciting place. Shrewsbury was definitely not an exciting place just after the war, you know. And I guess we were all looking for that. We were all going to see American movies, you know. That was exciting. L.A. sounded like, you know, paradise because England was grey and dismal. And, you know, the chaps had just come back from the war and they were bored out of their minds, you know. And the ladies, the girls, you know, now they didn't want them to work and they have been working through the war effort. So it's a pretty dismal place. So when you were Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard, you know, those kind of people, and Gene Vincent, it was like, whoa, that's where I want to be, you know.
Don't you always find that interesting how people over here were romanticized that era of England because we weren't there and vice versa?
Well, yeah, a little later, you started romanticizing in the 60s, you know. I was like Fats Domino, you know, Elvis, 50s, you know.
That's it feels like there's some DNA of that in this, right? I'm sure that DNA is in all of your music too. I mean, why wouldn't it be? But like, Don't Tread on Me, when I heard that song, like those chords, I don't know, almost R&B-ish, you know, like classic R&B. Am I right about that? It's like, I guess what I'm asking is like, do you find that there's a comfort spot with any genre or era for you when you're songwriting?
You know, I sit down at the piano and I'm not good. I'm still finding stuff. I'm self-taught. And that song in particular, you know, it was like, I don't know if I can. Andy came over and I'm thinking, I don't know if I can play this. It was just this chord sequence I really liked, you know. And I don't know what it is. People can call it anything they want, you know. Todd gets hold of it and it turns into Todd. You know, everything Todd touches, you know, he's fantastic. I mean, I couldn't believe what he did, you know. And I really don't know what genre you'd put that in. It's just what it is.
It's a great song. If that's a genre, it's a great song. And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Ian Hunter. No Hard Feelings, that's another one that really stood out to me. It sounds very personal. I don't know what it's about, but I, you know, what did it take to write that song?
It came out of, I'm sitting there playing and I want to make a man out of you. I want to make a man out of you. And I thought, that sounds great on the, you know, the way it's sung. I want to make a man out of you, you know. And it sort of developed from there into the rows I used to have with my dad all those years ago. And that's what it's all about, really. My dad and I've written a couple about him because he was great, but we were opposites, polar opposites, you know. I was the slob. And he was the guy, you know, like MI5, you know, the police force, the army, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you had to get out. 16, gone.
No, that was my assumption. When I heard it, I was like, this sounds like it would be about his dad. And maybe it's, you know, obvious. It takes me a few minutes with lyrics always. But
he was Scottish. He wasn't English. There's a big difference.
There you are. There you are.
When your dad's Scottish, you know where you are.
Revisiting a song like that, maybe a song is just a song and it comes and it goes, but when it's something a little bit more personal, do you find that it offers anything like closure or something like that?
Not really. It's an ongoing thing. You know, I've written about my dad before, you know, it's an interesting subject to me. How could we be so opposite? You know, my family is composed of opposites. You know, where did this all come from? But then, you know, to get it back with Jeff Beck on it was something really special, because he's playing it, just jamming it. He's playing it, you know, and it was such an honor to, you know, Johnny Depp got him involved, because they were working together at the time, and so that added a whole other dimension to it. You know, fabulous.
Do you give notes, or do you just say, do with this what you like? You don't give notes to Jeff Beck, right? You just say, here's the song, you do what you want.
No, I met Jeff. He was a bit spiky, you know. I mean, I'm probably the best. I worked with Mick once for many years, and that, he was mix idol. But to hear him on your record, I mean, you know, 70s guys, I was like in Motley Hoople, that was a 70s band. We sort of looked on the 60s guys like gods, you know, at the time, you know. So to have Jeff on your album was a big, big deal, you know. And I'm just sick of the song he's doing, you know, it's perfect.
You know, having someone like Jeff Beck, it's interesting, again, when we talk about this group of guests, because I assume someone like Jeff, like you hold in high regards, and maybe you hold everybody in high regards, but there's a lot of people I know on here that hold you in high regards as well. You know, and you've got like Billy Bob Thornton. I know he's a big fan of yours. I, you know, Taylor, I know he was a huge fan of yours.
I really didn't.
Yeah, well, but that's what is, you know, what is the, I don't know. I don't know if this is a question that can even be answered, but there's maybe some surrealness somewhere in there, just knowing that sort of feeling of kinship exists one way or the other. Does it?
I don't know, man. I talked to these guys since, you know, and during. And there was nothing, you know. Billy Bob Thornton, I mean, I know him as a film star, you know, and he's done some incredible stuff. So when you're talking to him, he's you're kind of a little in awe, you know. But then it turns out he's like your next door neighbor. So I guess there's a kinship there. Yeah, I haven't had any real upsets with anybody, you know. It's been great, you know. Taylor's like Joe Elliott, you know. He knows everything. He knows everything since God knows when. Every track, every album. I've never known such enthusiasm, you know. You know, for any particular genre. He loved Yes. That's where we argue.
True rock and roll hearts that guy had.
Yeah.
Just an absolutely true rock and roll hearts.
And for him to leave like that, you know, it was shocking. Absolutely shocking.
I mean, it doesn't put it in a different context, but having Taylor and Jeff Beck both on there at once, I mean, it's, I guess, bittersweet is the right word.
It was weird. It was weird because I didn't really know either of them. I mean, I got to talk to them on the phone and stuff like that. And I went out with Jeff and John, but I hardly knew them, you know. So it's such a compliment to have people like that on your record. Everybody on this record, you know, just for once. I did it once before, but it was more the jazz orientated, you know.
And it's, you know, Mike Campbell, who's not a fan of, you know, the Heartbreakers.
Well, it makes everything better, you know. He's like Ronson. He's just, you get these things back, and you play them, and you it's like with Ringo. You just big smile on your face. It's fun, because I'm a fan, you know. I always was a fan.
It, you know, obviously, Tom, speaking of Petty, you know, he's not around for, you know, to be a part of this, although I imagine he would have had he been around. Did you all have, you all came from such similar backgrounds and everything. I wondered about that. And musically too, did you know Tom? Was there a friendship there?
No. I what happened with Mike, I met him at the Village Record in LA with Ben Mont, and they both said, you know, if you're ever doing anything, you know, we're up for it, you know. And I just always remembered that. And Ben Mont's on the second one, part two, yeah. And I took him up on it.
I did want to hear, I was looking at the track list here. I Hate Hate, that's another very powerful moment on there. And it got two versions. Yeah. One of them also features Jeff Tweedy. How did that happen? Why is there two versions? And really, I guess the other question is, did anything specific inspire that song?
Well, it's very direct. I think it explains itself. I think the simpler the lyric, the better. You know, Lennon was a master at that, you know. So you're always aspiring to that kind of thing. That song... lyrically, it's probably one of the best I ever wrote, because it's just so simple. You know, I Hate Hate is out of date. That applies, you know, to everything without saying anybody. What happened was, Jeff's sung on stuff of mine before, and so we sent it to him thinking he would be singing on it. He'd be singing I Hate Hate vocally with me, because I love his voice. He's got a very special voice. And back it comes covered in guitar, you know, and he didn't sing on it. He played guitar. And I'm like, because I wanted the piano version on the record because it's all guitar on the record. This is the only one that's piano, you know. And so we've gone through this thing, and I hope Jeff's not mad at me, you know. But the other, it's on the CD, you know, it's like the additional track. But I just wanted one piano track on there, a la Jerry Lee, you know. And he didn't sing on it, he played on it. And he played great on it, that's the problem.
I like both the versions, too. And it's fun to hear, you know,
Yeah.
So there is a part two, and you've been talking about it a little bit, and you've been talking about it in other interviews. I guess what's the difference? Is it just more songs and this is the further continuation, or did you try to separate them musically? I mean, did any thought go into that part of it?
A bit of both, you know. Well, this is fits on the part one, you know what I mean? We'll worry about part two when we get to it. Part two is a little heavier, a little more political, maybe a little more cynical, I suppose. It sort of crept up on us over the years. What with the political situation and all the rest. I mean, I tried deliberately with the first one to keep it cheerful, keep it up, because people were anxious anyway, you know. And that wasn't an easy time for a lot of people. So the second one, I'm slipping a bit.
When you bring out the teeth, they're pretty sharp. I always appreciate that.
Well, it's a little bit more that way. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is debatable.
And more guests, I know I was just talking with Phil Collin. I know because you had Joe on the first one and Phil on the second one. You really like to separate the bands, right?
Oh, no, Joe's on the second one as well.
Oh, is he on there too? Okay. Phil didn't tell me that part. Looking forward to that. Phil, he was, I don't know, this is sort of lightly revolving outside of your world, but he told me he was bringing back his Mick Ronson tribute act, the Cybernauts, that they were going to do more of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's going to be getting some guests on that. So, you know, if he gives you a call, would you step up for that?
No. Nah. Yeah, of course I would.
No.
Anything to do with Ronson, you know, Phil's lovely. Phil's, you know, yeah. Favorite. Joe's on like, I don't know, 7, 8, something like that. But I've been around with Joe for a long, long time, you know.
I know that relationship goes deep. Who else is on there, if you don't mind me asking? Whatever comes off the top of your head.
Well, Belmont's on it, and a few that are on the first one as well. Cheap Trick doing a couple, and Lucinda Williams is doing a couple. You know,
I just talked to her yesterday.
You did?
Yeah.
Well, we haven't got to the point of disseminating and weeding because it's a duet kind of thing. You know? But yeah, we've got it in. You know, we have to. My co-producer, Andy York, is with Mellencamp, and Mellencamp's out doing, I don't know, 78 dates or something, you know. So I won't see Andy till late summer. So that's when we get into putting two together, yeah. Almost done, 60%.
Well, I can't wait to hear that. I love part one. It's been so much fun to hear this thank record. You really knocked it out. Ian, thank you so much. Seriously, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
You're very welcome.
And my thanks to Ian Hunter. The new record is called Defiance Part 1. Looking forward to Part 2. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, I do hope you hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. You do that, I'll give you 3 new interviews every single week. That's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So you can keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, as I just mentioned. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. We got new songs. We got lots of old favorites. There's music news. There's anniversary spins, bonus interviews as well. Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. A recent show had the music of Marshall Crenshaw and the Icicle Works, Tony and the Verve, Jane's Addiction, The Flaming Lips, Billy Bragg, Wilco, Patty Griffin, Guster, Liz Phair, the Brian Setzer Orchestra, Richard Thompson, Ricky Lee Jones, and a whole lot more. That's just a recent episode and the music that you can hear every weekday at 6 p.m. at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also, of course, find me on the old social media spots as well. That includes Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. All 3 of them, the address is at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Oh, I thought you were great. I enjoyed it.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.